All right, Don, I'm ready. You want me to take the opening, huh?
Buck Benny, the two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Just a real quick intro. I want to get right to the shows tonight because they're so good. I've found a nice upgrade of sound for this first one, which is Jack Benny's show from January 5th, 1947. And it guest stars Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. Can't do much better than that. So that should be just a fantastic episode with them in it. And it is one of the true classics, one of my favorites with guest stars on it. Also, following that will be from the same night, January 5th, 1947, will be the Phil Harris and Al's Face Show. This one's a little crackly in sound, but I'm just glad we have it because we don't have the next week or two's. And then we'll have another one, and then we won't have episodes for about a month, and then we'll start having episodes every week, which is great. Anyway, I hope you really enjoy this Jack Benny show, and then stay tuned for the Phil Harris show. It's always fun to bring you a couple of great shows, and tonight is no exception. There's some wonderful shows here. Enjoy Lauren Bacall, Humphrey Bogart, Jack Benny, Phil Harris, Alice Faye, and the rest of the gang.
The Jack Benny Program. For your own real deep down smoking enjoyment, remember
LSMFT.
Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. And fine tobacco is what counts in a cigarette.
Year after year, at auction after auction, independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen can see the makers of Lucky Strike consistently select and buy that fine, that light, that naturally mild tobacco.
Fine, light, naturally mild tobacco. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. And in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. So for your own real deep-down smoking enjoyment, smoke that smoke of fine tobacco, Lucky Strike. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw.
American.
Lucky Strike Program, starring Jack Benny, with Barry Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, as you all know, in the Rose Bowl game on New Year's Day, Illinois upset the Dope. And here he is, and he's still upset, Jack Benny!
Again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, for your information, I wasn't upset at all. I enjoyed the game very much.
Certainly was exciting, wasn't it, Jack?
Yes, sir. And what a score. Illinois, 45, UCLA, 14, and Al Hoish, 103. That was really something, wasn't it?
Oh, and what wonderful seats you had, Jack. How did you get such good tickets at the last minute?
Well, Don, it wasn't easy. You see, even though I was born in Illinois, I've lived in California for the past 15 years. So in order to get two tickets, I called Governor Warren.
You called the governor of California?
Yes, yes. He couldn't do anything for me, so he called Governor Green of Illinois. Governor Green called President George Stoddard of the Illinois University. President Stoddard got in touch with Ray Elliott, the coach. Elliott got in touch with Buddy Young. And fortunately, Buddy Young happens to be a very good friend of Rochester. So through Rochester, I not only got two seats on the 50-yard line, but I also got a sure thing in the fourth race at Santa Anita. Say, Don, who are you rooting for at the game?
Well, Jack, I didn't want to show any partiality, so I got a seat on the UCLA side and a seat on the Illinois side.
Well, Don, how could you possibly sit on both sides of the... Oh, of course.
Ah.
And, Don, weren't you disappointed when you weren't picked as the winning float? Huh? Well, better luck next year.
Hiya, Jackson.
Hello, Phil. Phil, get your band ready and... Phil, what happened to your orchestra? Half of your boys are missing. Where are they?
Look, Jackson, New Year's Eve was only 5 days ago. Give them time. Give them time.
You say what?
Leave them alone and they'll come home dragging their empties behind them.
I know. But meanwhile, do the best you can with the boys... Oh, no, no.
What's the matter, Jackson?
Sammy, the bass fiddle player.
Well, what about him? He's the best bass player in the country.
I know, but look at his bass fiddle. It has 6 silver handles on it.
Well, that's Sammy for you. If anything happens to him, he don't want us to go to no expense.
Oh, fine. Look what he has carved on the bottom of it. R.I.P. What's that?
Rest in Petrillo.
Now, cut that out! And until something happens to him, tell Sammy to put down the shovel, use a bow, and blow out the candles on the music stand.
Will you? Oh, by the way, Phil, I saw you at the Rose Bowl game New Year's Day.
Oh, is that where I was? Phil, you know where you were. That was a great game, wasn't it? What about that 103-yard run that Hoyce made?
Confidentially, Jackson, it was longer than that, but it won't go on record.
What do you mean?
He picked up the ball behind his old goal line, started down the field, ran up to the stands, asked me for my autograph, told me how to spell Harris, and then went on to make the touchdown.
What?
If he'd have waited for me to dot the I, they'd have nailed him on the 10-yard line.
Well, that just shows you how fast that boy is. Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack.
Well, everybody's here now except Dennis. Where is he?
I don't know. He hasn't come in yet.
Well, how can we go on with the show if the cast doesn't get here on time?
Oh, Jack, don't be mad at Dennis. I happen to know something that you don't know.
Don't tell me he has 3 shows.
No, Jack, it isn't that. It's something you won't believe.
What is it?
Well, all of a sudden, Dennis got a big crush on me.
A crush on you? How come?
I don't know. Someone must have told him I was a girl.
Oh, Mary, stop kidding. Has Dennis really got a crush on you?
Yes, Jack, and he's so cute. Ever since last week when I danced with him in that nightclub, he's been sending me notes and little gifts.
Gifts? What did he give you?
Oh, lots of things. His Boy Scout knife, a bag of marbles, 3 Coca-Cola bottle caps filled with mud, a ball of tin foil, a fish hook, and a stick of bubble gum.
No.
Yes, and I'm worried.
Why?
If you see me wearing his bicycle clip, you'll know we're engaged.
Well, how do you like that?
And, Jack, you should see the note he sent me yesterday.
Dennis sent you a note?
Yeah, wait a minute. I'll read it to you. Oh, it's so sweet. My darling Mary, I hope you won't think I'm silly, but I keep your picture on the wall of my bedroom. I didn't want my mother to know who I'm in love with, so I took a pencil and drew a mustache and a derby hat on you. I think I fooled my mother because now she's in love with you, too.
Well, I'll be darned.
And look how he finishes. Oh. I love you madly and passionately and will never forget the kiss you gave me when I took you home. Thanking you in advance for your next shipment, I remain... I remain yours truly, Dennis Day.
Well, that's the cutest letter I've ever heard. Let's see that. Mary, why has Dennis got the stamp pinned on the envelope?
Oh, that. He says that ever since he fell in love with me, he won't let anything else touch his lips.
Well, gee, he must be hungry by this time. That's certain. Shh, quiet. Here he comes now.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Mr. Benny.
Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Don.
Hiya, kid.
Hello, Phil.
Hello, Dennis. Dennis, I said hello.
Mary, don't make it so obvious.
Obvious. All I said was hello.
I know, but look how you're trembling.
Dennis, you're imagining things. She's not trembling.
What are you trying to do? Break us up?
No, I'm not trying to break you up.
Say, Mary, come here a minute, will you? I want to look at you.
All right, Dennis.
Gee, gosh.
Well, what is it, Dennis?
You look so much better without a mustache.
Dennis, what about the derby?
No, thanks. I'm not hungry.
I didn't mean that. But anyway, kid, I know how you feel. When you're in love, everything is bright and sunny and cheerful. Your heart overflows with goodness. You feel nice towards everybody.
Say, Jackson, did you hear about Fred Allen being voted the best comedian on the air?
There will be a short pause while Dr. Jekyll becomes Mr. Hyde.
Mary, it doesn't bother me at all. Anyway, I read about Fame magazine selecting Allen as the greatest comedian in radio. What a choice.
What's the matter with you, Jackson? Every time Fred Allen gets an award, you get mad about it. 2 years ago, you got mad because they put his picture on the cover of Time.
Phil, Fred's face was on the cover of Look.
It was on the cover of Time.
It was on the cover of Look. His face represented Time. That burns me up.
All right, all right. So he's not as pretty as I am. But you've got to admit he's got a great radio show.
Some great show. Comes on and jabbers for a few minutes, then he calls, Portland, 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 Portland. For the first 4 years, people thought he was a conductor on a Greyhound bus. Come on, Dennis, let's have your song.
Okay.
I hope you do believe me. I'll give you my heart. I love you, and you alone were meant for me. Please give your loving heart to me and say we'll never part. I think of you every morning, dream of you every night. Darling, I'm never lonely whenever you're in sight. I love you for sentimental reasons. I hope you do believe me.
I Love You for Sentimental Reasons, sung by Dennis Day. And very good, Dennis.
Yes, Dennis, I've never heard you sing so well.
That's because I'm in love.
With me?
It ain't your sister, Babe.
Woo, woo, woo! Dennis, behave yourself. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our feature attraction tonight, we are going to present... Now, excuse me. Come in. Well, Mr. Kitzel, what are you doing here?
Pardon the intrusion, Mr. Benny, but I came over to thank you for the Christmas present you sent me and to wish you a happy new year.
Well, the same to you, Mr. Kitzel. So you like the sweater I sent you, eh?
I have never in my life owned such a beautiful slopover.
No, Mr. Kitzel, you mean slipover.
Slopover, I mean it's too big.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, why didn't you return it?
Well, I like it that way because it makes me look like a hef cat.
A hef cat?
Hey, Baba Riba. Zip a de doody. Hey, Baba Riba.
Hey, Baba Riba. I know.
Do you also know the song about the cement mix master?
Yes. And, Mr. Kitzel, I'm glad my present suited you so well.
Yes, you know, I liked it so much, I started needing a pair of stockings to match the sweater.
You did?
Yes. But a funny thing happened. While I was sitting in the rocking chair, my wife came in and saw me knitting.
Uh-huh.
She got all excited and thought we was going to have another baby.
Well, Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
By the way, Mr. Kitzel, as long as you're here, would you like to sit down and hear the rest of the program?
Oh, I'm sorry, but I got to leave.
Oh, you should stay, Mr. Kitzel, because tonight our guest star is Lauren Bacall.
Lauren Bacall? Who, who?
Who what?
Who's going? I'm going to stay.
Well, good, good. But, Don... Don, you're mistaken about Lauren Bacall. She won't be here tonight.
Oh, why not?
Never mind. We haven't got time to discuss it. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Tell him what happened, Jack.
Mary, we've got a program to do. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Anyway, Don, the trouble started after you left the rehearsal yesterday at Jack's house.
Jack's house.
Lauren Bacall hadn't showed up as yet to rehearse a part. And Phil and Dennis and I decided to stick around and play a little gin rummage. So we went in the den and sat down. Say, Jack... Where are you and Lauren going to rehearse?
In the library.
Then we can stay here in the den and play cards, can't we?
Yep, that'll be all right. Rochester, will you bring in a deck of cards, please?
Yes, sir. What cards shall I bring, the red backs or the blue backs?
Oh, it doesn't make any difference.
Yes, it does. The reds are 40 cents, the blues are 50.
Bring them a deck of cards. They won't quibble about the price. Now, come on, Rochester. I want you to go in the library with me and help me get things ready.
Yes, sir.
Now, Rochester, I want to make a good impression on Miss Bacall, so see that there's a nice fire burning in the fireplace. Move the divan so it'll be nice and cozy in front of the fire. Turn the lights down low, turn on the phonograph, and put on some nice, soft, romantic music.
Want me to burn some incense and fan you with a palm leaf?
That won't be necessary. Now, let's see. I think these horn-rimmed glasses make me look a little too old. I guess I'll take them off.
Uh-oh, boss. I wouldn't do that if I were you. Remember what happened the time Miss Ann Sheridan came over to rehearse with you and you took off your glasses?
Oh, nothing happened.
When Miss Sheridan came in, you rushed over to where you thought you saw her, put your arms around the bridge lamp, kissed the parrot, and said, "Why, Annie, you bit me."
That's because it was dark. Now, let's see. Oh, that must be Miss Bacall now. Rochester, you answer the door. I want to sit down and make myself look alluring. I mean, relaxed. How do I look?
Fine, boss, but aren't you overdoing it with that rose in your teeth?
Rochester. What are you laughing at?
Ramona Benny.
The rose is for my lapel. Oh, answer the door.
Yes, sir.
Is Mr. Benny at home?
Yes, come right in, Mr. Cole.
Rochester, who is it?
Miss Lauren Bacall.
Well, Lauren Bacall.
You were expecting maybe Mrs. Nussbaum?
Rochester, you can get lost now.
Yes.
Well, come in, Lauren. This is in flesh, a Dieter. I mean, indeed, a pleasure. Make yourself comfortable. Sit down.
No, thanks. I'll just lean here against the door.
Gosh, Lauren. Seeing you there reminds me of your first picture, The Have and Have Not. You were leaning against the door, just like that. And then you said your famous line.
You mean, if you want anything, just whistle.
Yes. Well, Lauren... Lauren, shall we start rehearsing?
No hurry, no hurry. You got a cigarette?
A cigarette? Yes. Here you are.
Thanks. Match?
Match. You know, Lauren, that cigarette I gave you is a Lucky Strike.
I know, and it's my favorite brand, too.
Really?
Yes. They're so round, so firm, so fully packed. So free and easy on the draw.
Gee, Effie Boone never sounded like that. Gosh, Lauren, I can just picture you in a bathing suit holding up that big tobacco leaf. And you know, Lauren, Lucky Strikes are made of that fine, that light, that naturally mild tobacco.
Well, what do you know? And I thought Mother told me everything.
Live and learn.
You must have learned a lot.
Yes, yes. Well, now let's start rehearsing. Here's your script. We're going to do a sketch based on your picture, To Have and Have Not. You'll play the same part you did in the picture.
Okay.
Well, let's start. I'll take the first line.
Wait a minute, Jack. I'm supposed to lean against the door.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm sorry. Well, we'll start again. You're sore at me, aren't you, Slim?
Sure, Steve. I'm sore at you. I wanted to get even. I brought that bottle of brandy up here to make you feel cheap. But I'm the one who feels cheap.
Well, you've only got yourself to blame, Slim. After all, what did I do?
Nothing. What's more, you don't have to do anything. Oh, maybe just whistle. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
No, Slim. I got a better use for my lips. Come here and let me kiss you.
All right, but first take that rose out of your teeth.
I'm so sorry, you know. I meant to put that in my lapel, in my lapel. Now let's start the scene over again. You're sore at me, aren't you, Slim?
Sure, Steve, I'm sore at you. I wanted to get even. I brought that bottle up here to make you...
Who brought what bottle up where? Phil!
Hello, Curly.
Well, St. Peter must have left the gate open, and look who fell out.
Well, thanks.
Oh, leave a lamp burning in the window, Mother. I may be a little late.
Phil!
Ah, yes, there's good news tonight.
Phil!
Well, introduce me, Jackson.
All right, all right. This is Miss Lauren Bacall. Lauren, this is my colleague, Phil Harris.
Well, hoity-toity, I'm a colleague now.
Yeah, now go already.
Okay.
Now, come on, Lauren. Let's take that kissing scene again. We'll take that kissing scene again. Let's start where I... who can that be? I left strict orders not to be disturbed.
Mr. Benny, Mr. Humphrey Bogart's at the door.
Humphrey Bogart?
Oh, Jack, I forgot to tell you. Bogey said he dropped by here and picked me up. You know, he and I are married.
I know. Who do you think played the violin at your wedding? Anyway, he can wait outside. We got a scene to rehearse, and we're going to do it.
Hello, baby. Hiya, Jack.
Look, Humphrey, we're right in the middle of the rehearsal.
Oh, that's all right, Jack. Go right ahead.
We won't be long, honey.
That's all right, baby. You know, Jack, I'm glad to see you again. You're my favorite comedian.
I am? Well, that's good. Now, Lauren, I mean Miss Bacall. Oh, by the way, what should I call you, Lauren or Miss Bacall?
Mrs. Bogart.
Now, let's get on with the rehearsal, Mrs. Bogart. Start with your, starting with your last speech.
Okay. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
No, Slim. I got a better use for my lips. Come here and let me kiss you.
What a comedian. What a comedian.
Look, Humphrey, I'm trying to...
Mr. Benny, there's a telephone call for you.
Oh. Well, pardon me a minute, folks. I'll be right back.
How's it going, baby?
Oh, brother.
Yeah, I thought so. Say, baby, I want you to do something.
What is it?
When you get to kiss him, just put one arm around him and run your other hand through his hair.
Why?
I want to find out if he really wears one. Hey, what does Benny want to be a great lover for, anyway?
Well, why shouldn't he? After all, he played a romantic lead and the horn blows at midnight. You saw that, didn't you?
Yeah, and they called our last picture The Big Sleep. by the way, what's this sketch you're rehearsing with Benny?
To Have and Have Not. We're rehearsing the big scene you and I did in the picture.
Oh? Which one of you is playing my part?
He's coming back.
Oh, I'm sorry I had to answer the phone, but, well, that's the price of fame.
Who was it?
Wrong number. I mean, my sponsor called because he sent me the wrong number of tickets to the broadcast. Now, let's get on with rehearsal, Lauren. We'll start with my line. Well, You've only got yourself to blame, Slim. After all, what did I do?
Nothing. What's more, you don't have to do anything. Oh, maybe just whistle. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
Now, Slim, I got a better use for my lips. Come here and let me kiss you.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. Hold it. You're doing it all wrong.
Wrong?
Yeah. When you get ready to kiss a girl, you put your arms around her gently, tenderly.
What?
Yeah, you're not supposed to grab her by the earlobes and pull yourself up.
Oh, I see.
And now watch me. Come here, baby. Read that line again.
Okay. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
No, Slim. I got a better use for my lips. Come here and let me kiss you. Like this.
I get the idea. That's enough, Humphrey. Look, you can do that at home. Look. Humphrey, I'm paying her by the hour. Stop! I'm supposed to do that. I get the idea now, Bogey. Let you and I take it again, Lauren.
Say, Jack, our gin rummy game's over, so I thought I'd come in here and watch you rehearse.
All right, but be quiet. Now, come on, Lauren. Start with your line again.
Okay. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
Ah, Slim. I got a better use. Come here, Larry. Kiss you. Like this.
No, Jack. No, you're doing it all wrong. Here, let me show you again.
What?
I'll do it with Mary this time. Are you ready, Mary?
Am I ready? I was puckered up when I walked in here.
But look, Mary isn't even...
Come on, Mary. You take baby's line.
Okay. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
Oh, no. I've got a better use for my lips. Come here and let me kiss you. Like this.
Bogey, wait a minute. What is this anyway? Step aside, Mary. I want to talk to Mr. Bogart.
Yeah, and I want to talk to him, too.
Dennis.
Say, he's cute.
You haven't got a chance, sister. I send all my Coca-Cola tops to Mary.
Dennis.
Now listen to me, Bogart. I saw you kissing a woman I love, see? And you ain't muscling in on my racket, see? Those lips ain't big enough for the both of us, see? Now get out of here before you get hurt, see? Get out, see? Out, see? Out, see? Out!
Dennis!
See?
Come on, baby, let's get out of here. This guy's tough.
Bogart, Lauren, come back! Dennis, I can't believe it. You know what you did? You frightened Humphrey Bogart.
Sure.
Dennis, what's that you got in your hand?
A picture of my mother.
Oh, I wonder. Jack, now Lauren will never be on my program.
Jack, we'll be back in just a minute. But first, here's my good friend, Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs.
No doubt about it. In a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And year in, year out, consistently, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco.
Here's a tip from a man with a lifetime of tobacco experience. Mr. James Monroe Ball of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. An independent tobacco auctioneer for the past 31 years. Mr. Ball said,
I speak as an eyewitness when I say that season after season, I've seen the makers of Lucky Strike buy fine, ripe, mellow leaf. That good kind of tobacco that makes a swell smoke. I've smoked Lucky's myself for 29 years.
Remember, at auction after auction, independent tobacco experts like Mr. Ball can see the makers of Lucky Strike consistently select and buy that fine, that light, that naturally mild tobacco.
Fine, light, naturally mild tobacco. Real Lucky Strike tobacco, yes?
L-S-M-F-T.
Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. And this fine Lucky Strike tobacco means real deep-down smoking enjoyment for you.
So smoke that smoke of fine tobacco, Lucky Strike. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart for appearing on my program tonight. They can currently be seen in their Warner Brothers picture, The Big Sleep. Well, I better rush home now. Oh, taxi, taxi. Oh, taxi. Oh, doorman, get me a taxi, will you?
Look, bud, if you want a taxi, just whistle.
What?
You know how to whistle, don't you? Just put your lips together and blow.
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, what do you know? It works.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Company, makers of those fine Fitch products, present Alice Faye.
You'll never know just love you. You'll never know just how much.
Come with me to Alabama. Let's go to cured hammy. David Hammy. And that's what I like about the South.
Last week at the University of Southern California, the usual decorum of this venerable institution was somewhat shaken by the enrollment of one Phil Harris. While it's only an adult extension course, Phil is taking it very seriously. Last Monday was his first day in school, a day which began about 9 a.m. as Phil prepared to leave the house.
Are you sure you have everything, Phil?
Yeah, I think so, Alice.
Well, let's check them over again. Books?
Books.
Fountain pen?
Fountain pen.
Briefcase?
Briefcase.
Bubble gum?
Yeah, 27 pieces. And then I got a piece all broke in under the desk, too. And here's the putty knife to scrape it off my face. Hey, where's the button USC gave me to wear on my beanie?
Oh, here. Say, this is quite a slogan they have on here for next week's game. We'll murder UCLA.
Yeah, but I don't think they're too confident of winning.
Why?
Well, the button's reversible, and on the other side it says, well, weather permitting.
Phil's first week in college was a rather difficult one, as demonstrated by an incident which took place in class last Thursday.
Professor Whiteside.
Yes, Mr. Harris?
You're going to have to change my seat again.
What is it this time?
Well, I can't concentrate. That girl behind me keeps dipping my curls in her inkwell.
A series of such incidents, coupled with an inherent allergy to learning, left our hero by Friday in a somewhat puzzled frame of mind.
Phil, it's 9:30. Aren't you due down at USC?
Yeah, honey, but I don't think I'll go today.
Why not? I thought you were doing so well in your basket weaving class.
Yeah, I was, but they gave us a test yesterday.
How did you make out?
Not so good, honey. After the test, they told me I was still 2 years away from the leather-burning group.
Well, what kind of a test did they give you in basket weaving?
Oh, the professor looked at everybody's work and then he gave each one a grade.
What grade did you get?
I didn't get no grade. He didn't give me one. When he came to mine, he just read a little poem.
Oh, that's wonderful. What did he say?
A tisket, a tasket, who made this lousy basket?
Well, honey. Honey, if you're having so much trouble in school, my brother said he'd be glad to help you.
Your brother? Oh, yeah, Pinhead Incorporated. Brother.
Now, don't be silly. My brother was a brilliant student at CCNY. Why, he's got an M.A., a Ph.D., and an L.L.D.
Yeah, well, when's the bum going to get a J.O.B.? Oh, hello, Mr. Merton. Say, Alice said the children were up here with you.
Yes, they were a minute ago. I was giving them a little geography lesson.
Oh, you were, huh? Hey, Governor, what's this big ball here?
Why, that's a globe, Mr. Harris. A map of the world.
Yeah? How come you got a round one?
Mr. Harris, the Earth is round.
The Earth is round? No kid. Hey, wait till Alice finds out about this.
Well, I'd better get my things together. I thought I'd take the children outside for a little nature study this afternoon.
Outside? Well, you better be careful. There's still a pretty strong undertow by the sundial.
Well, Mr. Harris, I really don't mind your California weather. You know, we English have always been a seafaring people.
Oh, Governor, you're really cooking with Barville now. I knew that wasn't going to get nothing. I knew it wasn't. Say, you got a lot of books here, haven't you, Mr. Merton?
Yes, I'm quite an avid reader in my spare time.
Yeah. Hey, this must be a new novel. Here, this one. Annie's Lit on a Bicycle.
Let me see that. Oh, no, Mr. Harris. That's analytical psychology.
What? What is it?
Well, it's a method used in psychiatry. As you know, a psychiatrist can often change a man's whole personality.
Is that right?
Oh, yes. Often they can take a shy, hesitant person and turn him into a strong-willed, domineering individual.
Yeah, well, I think they overdid a little with John L. Lewis.
Hello?
Hello, Alice, it's me.
Phil, where are you? I thought you were staying home today, and then Sissy told me you went off in the car.
Yeah, I know. I'm down here on Wilshire Boulevard.
But, Phil, you had your hair done last week.
No. I'm in the professional building. I'm going to see one of them psychiatrist fellas.
A psychiatrist?
Yeah. Mr. Merton told me that they can change a guy's whole personality.
Phil, I don't want you to change. All this nonsense about college and education was your idea.
But, honey, I need something like this. After all, I've got to have something to fall back on when my youth and beauty are gone.
Phil, it's ridiculous you're going to a psychiatrist.
Well, I don't know. Now, it might not be a bad idea. This guy may be able to bring out my personality.
Bring out your personality? Look, Phil, if they brought it out any farther, nobody could stand you.
Oh, all right, wise guy, go ahead. Stifle the tender blossom of gentility.
What?
Oh, never mind. I'll see you later. Bye.
An old proverb says, "The beauty of the heavens is the stars. The beauty of women is their hair." Yes, and that's why countless beauty-wise women give careful beauty care to their hair with regular use of Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo. For Fitch Shampoo guards the loveliness of the hair, giving it the shining sparkle of exquisite jewels, leaving it soft and manageable, a real beauty asset. Whether you have blonde, red, brunette, or gray hair, Fitch is the shampoo for you. For Fitch Shampoo is good for all colors and textures of hair. And this shampoo is so gentle, it will not harm even a baby's tender scalp. Discriminating women like Fitch shampoo, because Fitch is completely soluble in water, and only an ordinary water rinse is necessary. Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo rinses out thoroughly and quickly in either hard or soft water, revealing natural highlights in your hair. It's the shampoo you can depend on for exacting hair beauty care. Fitch is spelled F-I-T-C-H.
Third floor, mister.
Okay.
Dr. Linebach's office is right down the hall.
Thank you.
I spell on Alabama. We kissed in a field of white, and stars fell on Alabama.
All right, now get your head out of me mop bucket. Here, I'll give it a tug.
Bammy last night.
Oh, it's you, is it?
Oh, hello, lady. Say, didn't I run into you over at USC last week?
That you did, you balmy-headed jobber owl. And it was to shed myself of the likes of you that I quit my job and came over here. Lock, stock, and bucket.
Well, I'm very sorry, lady. You see, I just happened to be looking for a psychiatrist.
Oh, a psychiatrist, is it? Well, if you're asking me, it ain't a minute too soon.
But Miss Bucket...
Ah, get along with you now before I wash your mouth out with me bottle of Clorox.
Democrat. Oh, here's Dr. Linebach's office right here.
Well, Mr. Harris, one of the principles of psychoanalysis is for me to come to know you as well as possible. Now, suppose you begin by telling me a little about your background. For instance, was your youth a happy one?
Oh, yeah, sure. My father and I were great pals. We'd always go out together.
Oh, I'm very glad to hear that.
Yes, and after five or six drinks, we'd always go out together.
Yes. Well, before we continue, I don't believe you told me your present occupation.
Well, I'm a band leader.
Ah, a musician?
No, a band leader.
I see. Well, to what school of music do you subscribe? Wagnerian, romantic, impressionistic?
Gut bucket.
A gut bucket. Well, perhaps if you'll continue talking at random about yourself, you'll unconsciously reveal something else of value. Now, just keep rambling on and say anything that comes into your head.
I can say anything?
Yes, yes.
Well, let me see. Well, I remember when I started with my first band in Nashville, Tennessee. We had a sharp little outfit, too, Psyche. We was billed as Jeter Harris and his Tobacco Road Playboys. Yes, sir, we was really ready. Now, we opened at a little joint on First Street.
Yes, yes, go on, go on.
Yeah, it was called Sol Cohen's Southern Ratskeller. I can hear that outfit playing now, Psyche. We had one number that was murder. Murder. And I sing with delight as I spend most the night 'neath that billowy ocean with you. Last night, I dreamed that I was down in the bottom of the sea, down in that salty water. And I met a maiden fair who had a cottage there. Of course, she didn't have it in her own name, but anyway, she had it. And she had a tale of a fish for a train, but whoa, now whoa, how that gal could entertain. And what a time I had with Minnie, the mermaid, down in the bottom of the sea. I lost all my troubles in amongst the bubbles, why, she was just as sweet as she could be. And every night when the starfish came out, I hugged and kissed her so. Whoa, whoa, what a time I had with Minnie, the mermaid, down in her seaweed bungalow. Low, down in her seaweed bungalow. Oh, what a time I had with Minnie, the mermaid, down in the bottom of the sea. I lost all my troubles and amongst those bubbles, why, she was just as cute as she could be. And every night when the starfish came out, I hugged and kissed her so. Oh, oh, what a time I had with Minnie, the mermaid, down in her seaweed bungalow. Low, down in her seaweed bungalow. Many brave hearts are asleep in the deep, so beware, beware.
Mom,
you children want?
Oh, nothing. We just wondered where Daddy was today.
Well, Alice, your daddy went downtown to see a psychiatrist.
What's a psychiatrist?
Well, a psychiatrist is sort of a doctor.
Oh, is Daddy going to have a baby?
Oh, no, of course not. He thinks the psychiatrist will bring out his personality.
Oh, murder.
Phyllis, you stop that.
Mommy, is Daddy still going to go to college?
Well, I don't know, Alice.
Why couldn't he take lessons from our tutor, Mr. Merton?
Well, honey, a grown man like your daddy couldn't study the same lessons as you children.
Yes, he could, Mommy. We'd go slow until he caught up.
Why, with that mind of his, your father's liable to set psychiatry back 20 years. I'd love to hear a little of that conversation.
Well, Mr. Harris, listening to you talk about your past life and delving into your subconscious have made this a most, shall I say, unusual half hour. In fact, I've learned a few things about human behavior that I never even suspected.
Yeah, Doc, I was a dog, wasn't I?
That's not exactly the psychological term, but it will suffice. Now, about this Frankie person you mentioned, your guitar player. I take it he's an old friend?
Oh, yeah, Frankie? Why, me and him been cutting up touches for 100 years. You know, I'll never forget the first time I ran into Frankie. He was singing and playing his guitar down on Rampart Street in New Orleans, and I happened to be walking by, and the guy, he was really...
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me feel great.
Thank you, lady.
You'll never know, dear, how much I...
Bless you, sir.
Love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. You're my sunshine, my only...
Here, bud.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right, buddy. You know, you play a pretty good guitar there. How come a guy like you is playing in the streets for nickels?
I was desperate, pal. It was either this or Lombardo.
Well, don't knock it, kid. There ain't no tin cup in his outfit. But I like your style pretty well. Say, why don't you quit this racket and sign up with my band?
Yeah? What's your name?
Phil Harris.
You are my...
Yes, 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 Mr. Harris, a most significant episode. Now, I understand you are married. Suppose you tell me something about your wife. For instance, how did you meet her?
Well, she was in the great big show in New York. And I thought she was the most beautiful girl that I'd ever seen. And for 3 weeks, I stood outside the stage door every night just to watch her come out.
I see, I see.
And finally, I prepared a beautiful speech to say to her. Then one night, my dreams come true. She spoke to me.
Excuse me, Sonny. I've noticed you standing out here every night for 3 weeks. Tell me, was there something you wanted to say to me?
Yes, Miss Fay, I...
Well, this is all very interesting, Mr. Harris. But when did you actually propose to Miss Fay?
Oh, well, that was a few years ago. You see, we were parked down by the ocean at Malibu. And I reached over and I took her hand.
Oh, it's a lovely night, isn't it, Phil?
Yeah.
sure is. Gorgeous.
Al, have you ever parked out here with any other girl?
Nah. Of course not, honey. Why, since I met you, I haven't even thought about another girl.
Really? Oh, that's awfully sweet of you.
You know, that moon up there tonight, this is the perfect setting for something... Something I want to ask you.
What is it, Phil?
Will you marry me, Paulette? Oh!
This has all been very helpful, Mr. Harris. Now, as you know, we psychiatrists attach great importance to dreams. Do you ever have any unusual dreams?
Yes, sir. Yes, I do, Doctor. You know, I keep dreaming I'm on a gold bandstand in Carnegie Hall with a diamond baton. I'm leading an orchestra composed of 100 men and a girl, and each one of those men is Phil Harris.
I see. A nightmare. Now tell me, when they play, do you enjoy the music?
I don't know. It's always so lousy, it wakes me up.
Ah, that's very interesting. But tell me, in your dream, who is this girl?
That's the awful part of it. She's Petrillo.
Well, Mr. Harris, you've been very helpful in this little interview. Of course, I shall consult my colleagues on your case. But offhand, I'd say that your mental processes reveal to me what is known as a megalomania.
Hiya, gorgeous. Your laughing boy is home.
Hello, honey. What are you so happy about?
Oh, nail me down, kid. I'm riding high. I'm happier than Tom Brennan with an old lady from Peoria.
Say, you must have done all right with that psychiatrist.
All right, man. I was dynamite.
Well, tell me about it.
Oh, I really laid it on him, kid. First, he talked to me for a while, and then he gave me a lot of tests. And then you know what he said?
What?
He said that I had strong leanings towards megalomania coupled with a powerful narcissus complex.
The psychiatrist said that?
Yeah, that alone was worth the $200. Don't forget you got 100 of it. Now, the doctor was so excited he called in 6 of his buddies to look at me, and they said they'd never seen anything like it.
I can imagine.
Then another one of them psychics measured my head with a pair of ice tongs.
What?
Sure, he said he wished some guy named Darwin was alive, or Darwin. Kept asking for a guy named Darwin.
Oh, Phil, they didn't actually measure your head.
They did, too. And you want to know something? It's grown 5 inches since I had my own show.
Only 5 inches?
Sure. Hey, get your mother on the phone, will you? I can't wait to tell her all about what them guys said.
Well, wait a minute, honey. Now, this isn't exactly the sort of thing to tell my mother. Anyway, she's not home.
Sure she's home. She always gets through at the roundhouse by 3.
Phil.
Go on, call her now. I'll make her take back some of them things she said about me.
What did she ever say?
Well, she said my eyes were set too close together. For one thing, and she also told everybody that our marriage wouldn't last.
Phil, Mother never thought that at all.
Then how come after we were married, she parked in front of the house for 3 weeks with a motor running?
What are you doing in here by yourself with the lights out?
Oh, honey, leave me alone, will you?
But what's the matter?
Mr. Merton just translated what all them psychiatrists said about me.
Phil, stop banging your head against the wall.
Well, I can't help it. He told me all that stuff the psychiatrist said means that I'm conceited. Now, you know that ain't true.
Well, you'll have to admit you are rather fond of yourself.
No more than any other beautiful creature.
Now, look, you don't have to carry on so about all this.
Well, I can't help it. Them doctors were saying mean things about me.
Well, I don't care what they say, Phil. I think you're pretty wonderful just the way you are.
Do you, honey?
Of course. I consider myself the luckiest one, finding a boy like you. What did I do to deserve a break like this? You're a bundle of joy, a barrel of fun, 100% IQ. You've got everything, and I've got you. Like a duck takes to water, like the flowers take to dew, like a Latin takes to a Latin quarter, I take to you. Like a fish takes to swimming, like the Irish take to stew, like a Scotchman takes to his pipe and slippers, I take to you. Like sweet and low, yes and no, like golly gosh and oh gee, they all go together, and a hundred, so do we. Like a shop page to trading, like the French to parlez-vous, like a southerner takes to a few mint juleps, I take to you, baby, I take to you. Like moon and June, kiss and bliss, a park, a bench, and a tree. They all go together, and the honey, so do we. Like a star takes to gleaming, like a moonbeam to the blue, like a lover takes to a night of dreaming, I take to you, baby, I take to you.
Alice and Phil will be back in just a moment. Have you ever heard a person described as one who really knows how to use his head? That could well apply to anyone who uses Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo to keep his or her hair dandruff-free, refreshingly clean. If you use your head and use Fitch Shampoo, you'll be sure your appearance is not marred by embarrassing dandruff. For Fitch Shampoo actually removes dandruff the very first time you use it. Fitch is the only shampoo made whose guarantee to remove dandruff is backed by one of the world's largest insurance firms. This famous shampoo has a special dissolving action that reconditions your hair as it penetrates and cleanses the thousands of tiny hair openings on the scalp. All traces of dandruff on the hair and scalp are dissolved by this special action. Then, when you add water gradually, a wonderfully rich lather forms to carry away the dissolved dandruff. So use your head. Buy an economical bottle of Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo at your drug or toilet goods counter, or have professional applications at your beauty or barber shop.
Phil. Are you still feeling bad about what those mean old doctors said?
Sure I am. I went to college to get some education, and I saw that psychiatrist to try and improve myself, and, well, everyone's against me.
But, Phil, how many times have I told you, in spite of whatever happened, you'll always, always have me?
I know, baby, but money isn't everything.
Tune in next week when the F.W. Fitch Company again brings you the Fitch Bandwagon with Alice Faye and Phil Harris. This program is written by Joe Connolly and Bob Mosier, directed by Paul Phillips, with original music composed and conducted by Walter Sharp. Included in the cast were Janine Roos, Ann Whitfield, and Elliot Lewis. Alice Faye appears through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox.
Man, for a while, let a song be your style, you Fitch shampoo. don't despair. Use your head, save your hair, use Vicks shampoo.
Men, use Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic daily. It makes your scalp tingle with that feeling of new pep and life. Fitch's Ideal is not sticky or greasy. So pep up your scalp and give your hair that well-groomed look with Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic. Bill Foreman speaking.
Hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another episode of the Jack Benny Show from the 1936-37 season. This is the feud, and I had a really long podcast last night about Fred Allen, and I'm reading in Jack's book now, and the reason I'm kind of laughing to myself is it is so hilarious. There's basically, without them knowing it, they're having a feud about the feud between their two books, and we'll get to that in just a second, but last night I quoted a lot of Fred's book. Tonight we're going to be quoting out of Jack's book, Sunday Nights at 7. So this is Jack's own words, and it goes about to talk about the beginning of the feud. So I think I will go ahead and read this to you, and then I'll point out the issues I have with, well, basically Fred and Buck and Jack are all having sort of an argument amongst ourselves about this whole thing. So we shall see where we go from here and what I'm going to put together for you. Anyway, here's Jack's quote. Allen fired the opening shot in our feud. In 1936, a 10-year-old child prodigy, violinist Stuart Kanin, guested on Allen's radio show. I didn't notice this until just now. He also misspelled Stuart Kanin's name. Stuart Kanin's name is S-T-U-A-R-T, Stuart. And they're spelling it S-T-E-W-A-R-T. Both Fred misspelled it, and now Jack misspelled it. That's charming. They'd have some spell checkers. Anyway, all right, let's keep going. Kanin performed Dvorak's The Bee. This is a fast, brief solo piece that was constantly confused by radio critics and radio reporters with Rimsky-Korsakov's Flight of the Bumblebee. Among those who so confused it was Fred Allen himself, who, I found out when I read his memoirs, was under the impression Kanin played the Flight of the Bumblebee. Of the two insects, Dvorak's is much the harder. But that is neither here nor there. So basically what he's saying is the bee is a lot harder to play than a Flight of the Bumblebee. And I, as far as I know, that is true. The Flight of the Bumblebee is darn fast. What I'm going to do is, after this podcast, I'm going to play you both Flight of the Bumblebee and the bee, so you will hear the difference between the two. And then we'll go from there. They're each only 1 minute long, so they're fairly short, and the Flight of the Bumblebee has a connection to radio anyway. It's basically the theme song for the Green Hornet, both in radio and television, so you'll all have heard it before, probably. Anyway, and just the tone that Jack kind of takes, like, I can't believe it, Fred even got it wrong, and so did the radio critics, and the reporters, well, fine, Jack, you can get after them. But this doesn't explain the fact that on Jack's show last week that we heard it, the first insult he gives and to start off the whole feud back to Fred Allen says that Stuart Kanin had played the Flight of the Bumblebee, not the bee. So Jack, the first person to get it wrong is Jack. Okay, on Fred's show, they got it right. They said it was the bee. They introduced him. Stuart Kanin played the bee, the whole thing. And then the very first person to ever get it wrong is Jack. So it's either Jack's writer's fault or Jack's fault. But everybody that follows from there probably got it from Jack. So anyway, I just thought that was kind of humorous. if you listen to that, that's, you know, where it started to get it wrong. Let's see. Kanan played the bee as if it were a horny drone in hot pursuit of the queen bee. I know. I was listening to the program. Imagine my surprise when Alan congratulated the youthful violinist and then added that there was an old man named Jack Benny who thought he could play the fiddle. After hearing you play, Stuart, there's quotation marks around this, so he says he's quoting Alan at this point. Alan said, I think Jack should hang his head in shame. He should take the horsehairs out of his bow and return them to the tail of the horse. Benny is the only violinist who makes you feel the strings would sound better back on the cat's intestines. Now, okay. So that's pretty close to what Fred had said. The whole thing about the cat isn't in Fred's, what Fred says he said. Fred's and Jack's basically are the same, where it says, I think Jack should hang his head in shame. Okay, that's the same. And I do think that was said. Yesterday I talked about it. That was probably said on the West Coast version of the show, of Fred's show, because it certainly wasn't said on the East Coast that we heard. And Jack would hear the West Coast version. And it makes sense because Jack's response last week was about hanging his head in shame and that he shouldn't have to hang his head in shame. So it wouldn't make any sense if that wasn't already said. So I think that's probably true. He should take the horsehairs out of his bow and return them to the tail of the horse. Well, that's both Fred and Jack have said the same thing. And so I'm going to say I believe that's probably accurate. If we ever find that West Coast recording of Fred's show, it's probably there. Now, this whole thing about the cat and his intestine, I've heard that many times on Fred's show and Jack's about that piece, and I think maybe that's just thrown in from Jack getting his history confused a little bit. Who knows? Maybe Fred said it. Whatever. I wasn't there. Jack follows with saying, I now play the bee in concert. I didn't get the hang of it until 1966. The piece lasts only 1 minute, but it took me 30 years to master it, with an exclamation point. Well, I wouldn't take this lying down, and on my next broadcast I sneered at Stuart Kanan as a rank amateur, and I described Fred Alan as a broken-down juggler who was tone-deaf as a result of being hit in the head by some falling Indian clubs he'd failed to catch during his many years as a failure and small-time vaudeville act. I said that I, for one, could play the bee, and any time a true music lover requested this number, I would be happy to oblige. So that's very similar to what Fred Allen's book said, too. But they're taking later parts of the of things that were going to go on in the feud and bringing them closer to the front. I mean, if you listen to last week's episode, I mean, there was one line, one little throwaway line in Fred's show, and one little response at the end of Jack's show that started this whole feud off. It's crazy, but we will get more into the feud as we go. But I thought I would just want to clarify a little bit about the bee versus Flight of the Bumblebee and how it always gets confused by everybody, including Jack and Fred. And so we will start. I'm going to play you first the Flight of the Bumblebee, which I can't remember who I'm playing it from, but they're a great violinist, and so I found this on YouTube, and so I bring this to you. And following that, we will play you the bee. I listened to a whole bunch of versions of it, and to be honest, I like Stuart Kanan's version the very best. So I will play you yet again Stuart Kanan's 1 minute rendition of the bee, so that you can compare the Flight of the Bumblebee to the bee, and you'll know the difference. And then we'll get on with tonight's episode of the Jack Benny Show. And I hope you enjoy our discussions of the feud and the confusion that ensues when reading quotes from Jack and Fred. And we just have to know that neither of these guys, none of the writers, nobody in the world, even in the 70s and 80s, probably even in the early 90s, knew that we would have such easy access to such a comprehensive catalog of all of the Jack Benny and Fred Allen shows and old-time radio shows. So when people are quoting things and saying what they remember, they're remembering stuff, you know, sometimes 30, 40 years back. And we get to hear them like they're today. I mean, we can go back and we're going to listen to last night's episode. First time anybody's probably heard it in 75 years for most people, because it's only been available for 6 months that it's been released to the public again. Jack's show here has been around a lot longer, but how long have they had it in where everybody's had it in their collections and everything, and where I can share it on a podcast? I couldn't share it. We didn't even know how to do podcasts or what they were 10 years ago or something like that. So it's amazing where we are. But enjoy, and we will see you tomorrow for some more Jack Benny from the 1951 season and some more Phil Harris. So excited to bring those to you, and we'll see you folks next time.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston and Phil Harris and his orchestra. The orchestra opens the program with Gee, But You're Swell. There's a right way and an easy way of doing almost everything. And when you serve Jell-O for dessert, you found both the right way and the easy way to please everybody. Because Jell-O is so bright and colorful to look at, so wonderfully good and refreshing to taste, It's always sure of a welcome, and a mighty big one, too. Jell-O is no trouble to make, either. It's amazingly quick and simple. All in all, it's a perfect dessert, the most popular gelatin dessert in the entire world today. Jell-O is first in favor because it's first in flavor. Six delicious flavors that come from fresh, ripe fruit. Jell-O and only Jell-O has that grand, extra-rich, real fruit flavor. So always make sure that you get the real thing. Look for the big red letters on the box. They spell Jell-O. That was Gee, But You're Swell, played by Phil Harris and his orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you America's boyfriend who can't get a date, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Thanks. Hello again. This is Jack Benny, the lone wolf, talking. Can't get a date. I can have a date every night in the week if I want to.
Oh, I didn't mean anything, Jack. I just wanted to start out with a laugh, that's all.
Well, there's very little humor getting laughs at other people's expense. And that reminds me, come here a minute, Don. Did you hear Fred Allen last Wednesday night?
Oh, sure. It was a swell program. It was really great.
Don't review it, Don. Just answer yes or no. Did you hear Alan make those innuendos? You know, those slurring remarks about my violin playing?
Yes, I did.
Pretty catty, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't know. He was just kidding, and you're taking it seriously.
Well, so would Heifetz or any other musician. Why didn't Fred make those cracks when we were both in New York instead of waiting till I'm 4,000 miles away? It ain't cricket, you know.
Oh, now, calm down, Jack.
Did you hear him, Phil?
Yeah. He was very funny.
Well, that's not the point. What does Alan know about music anyway? He's just a reformed juggler. Let him top that one.
Hello, Jack.
Well, as I live and breathe and stand under a strong light so people won't mistake the wrinkles in my face for a washboard, ho, 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 if it ain't Portland.
I mean Mary. Hope he heard that.
What's the matter with you, Jack?
Plenty. Did you hear Fred Allen Wednesday?
Yeah. Gee, that was a funny program. What laughs? Wow.
Don't elaborate, you little traitor. The way he talked about my violin playing, I ought to sue him.
You ought to sue your teacher, too.
Is that so? Well, I expected that from you. Anyway, for your information, young lady, I took violin lessons before Alan was born.
You did a lot of things before Alan was born.
Well, then let him respect his elders. Imagine saying that I couldn't play Flight of the Bumblebee at the age of 10. I played Flight of the Bumblebee so often, I got the hive.
I bet you stung up the whole town with it.
Oh, yeah?
Mary, that was a honey.
Hey, wait a minute, Phil. You know, you're still on probation with me. If you don't behave yourself, I'll make you take back that watch you gave me for Christmas.
Okay, where is it?
Well, just be careful, that's all.
Hello, Jack.
What's so funny, Kenny?
Did you hear Fred Allen? Oh, boy, that guy kills me.
Yeah. Listen, Kelly, did you realize he insulted me?
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. I want to tell you something, and this goes for all of you. I'm going to make a rule right now. Hereafter, anybody working for me can listen to Alan's program. They mustn't enjoy it. And furthermore, either Fred Allen will have to apologize or send me a watch. And a good one, too.
Speaking of watches, folks, let me tell you about Jell-O.
What's that got to do with it?
Jell-O is first in favor because it's first in flavor. It's inexpensive and easy to make, and every day millions of people eat it.
That was very subtle, Don. How did you ever think of it?
Oh, it was nothing, Jack. Just an inspiration, that's all.
Well, come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
I want to take this opportunity of wishing you and your company a very, very happy New Year.
Well, you said that last week.
My mother didn't hear me. Goodbye.
I'll bet Alan sent him over to annoy me. Play, Phil.
Hey,
That was When My Dream Boat Comes Home, played by Phil Harris and his orchestra. Say, Phil, I didn't see you over at Paramount's Silver Jubilee for Adolph Zucker last Thursday night. Where were you?
Well, I did want to be there, Jack, but I had to work.
Oh, that's too bad. We had a lot of fun. All the big stars were there, you know, Fred McMurray and Mary Boland and Carol Lombard. It was a gala event.
Gee, I'm sorry I missed it.
So am I.
What a party. You know, after the show was over, I took Miss Lombard out. I mean, Carol. We went for a little drive.
Just the two of you?
No, Clark Gable went along. You know, for laughs. You know. See, he happens to be a friend of Carol's family. Also a good friend of Carol's.
So good that Jack sat in the rumble seat.
Who asked you?
Did you, Jack?
Well, I'm a sort of an outdoor man, you know. You know, one sniff of monoxide and I'm a new person. That's monoxide.
Well, then, Jack, Miss Lombard really had a date with Clark Gable, huh?
No, no, it was a kind of a trio, you know.
Oh, boy.
What is it, Kenny?
That Fred Allen sure panicked me.
I wish you'd tune in on us once in a while. Well, anyway, Phil, the three of us were driving along, and we stopped over at the Brown Derby to get a... That's a Happy New Year. I'm not having one. Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
I hope I'm not intruding.
No, no, I'm just in the middle of my program, that's all.
Well, if I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to raise my voice in protest.
Well, go ahead. What seems to be the trouble?
Well, you've been doing a Western serial for weeks now called Buck Benny Rides Again.
Yes, I have.
Well, it's been causing me no end of trouble and just tons of embarrassment.
Well, in what way?
Well, you see, my name happens to be Buckingham Benny.
Oh.
But now everybody crudely refers to me as Buck.
Buckingham Benny. You're not a relative of mine, are you?
Goodness, no.
Well, it makes me feel better, too. Well, tell me, Buckingham, what do you do? I mean, what business are you in?
I'm a window dresser in Pomona.
A window dresser. Well, tell me, what's the well-dressed window wearing this season?
Oh, don't be so facetious.
I won't.
You would if you knew what it meant.
Quiet. Well, Bucky, I've never met a window dresser before. How do you go about dressing a window?
Well, I use a lot of velvet drapes and chiffon and colored silk.
Do you use any crepe de chine?
Oh, just oodles of it.
I see. Mary, what are you laughing at?
Kenny likes Fred Allen.
Well, Buckingham, I'm terribly sorry about the whole mess. Is there anything I can do?
Yes, I wish you would discontinue Buck Benny Rides Again.
We can't very well tonight, but look, as long as you've already become involved in this predicament, how about sticking around a while and appearing in our Western play?
Oh, no, I'm terribly afraid of horses.
Well, so am I, but don't tell anybody.
And guns. Do you use guns?
Yes.
Well, I hate them. I've never even shot off my mouth.
By the way, Bucky, this is Mary Livingston.
How do you do?
Hello, Buck.
See? I get that all day long.
Well, so do I. Don't worry.
Well, you get paid for it.
Well, that's a thought. Oh, I want you to meet Kenny Baker. He's going to sing for us in a moment. Kenny, this is Buckingham Benny.
Hiya, Buck.
I'm going home.
Now, don't let it upset you. Don't get angry.
I bet he carries mad money.
Yeah, now sit right down here and listen to Kenny's song. What are you going to sing?
Oh, look. Look, Mr. Benny, look.
Well, what's the trouble?
What's that?
Don Wilson, be quiet. Sit down. Go ahead and sing, Kenny.
Pale hands I loved beside the Shalimar. Where are you now, who lies beneath your spell? Whom do you leave? rapture's long way far. Before you agonize them in farewell, before you agonize them in farewell. Pale hands I loved beside the Shalimar. Where are you now? Where are you now? Pale hands, pink tipped, like lotus buds that float on those cool waters where we used to dwell. I would have rather held you round my throat, crushing out life than waving me farewell. Crushing out life the Shalimar. Where are you now? Where are you now?
Delicious and lovely. That was Kashmiri Song, sung by Kenny Baker, accompanied by the orchestra, and listened to by Buckingham. And now, ladies and gentlemen, our original Western serial.
Mr. Benny.
Yes?
If you're going to start that cowboy stuff, I'm leaving.
Where are you going, Bucky?
Back to Pomona. Goodbye.
There he goes. I hope he gets home all right. Anyway, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, again we give you Buck Benny Rides Again. Or wait till he tries to walk. Once more, I will play the part of Sheriff Buck Benny, as tough an hombre as ever wore a fright wig for a toupee. Flip one over on you, boys. The scene is the office of the sheriff of Cactus County, where we find the sheriff with his mind on his work and his feet on his desk. Curtain. Music.
Morning, Sheriff.
Morning, Sheriff.
Wake him up, Deputy Baker.
Okay.
Ouch. Deputy Baker, what's the idea of waking me up so violent-like?
Sorry, Buck. I'll buy you a new hat.
I'm not worried about the hat, but that ear will be kind of hard to replace. What's up, boys?
Well, Sheriff, the town folks are kind of up in arms because you ain't captured Cactus Face.
Tell them everything is all right now. I just dreamt I cornered Cactus Face in Red Gulch Canyon.
You did? Did you slap the handcuffs on him?
No, I'm saving that till I go to sleep tonight.
Well, congratulations, Sheriff. I knew you could do
it.
Yeah.
I could catch an outlaw, too, if I didn't have insomnia.
You couldn't catch a maverick with a corral for a lasso.
Oh, you're just trying to mix me up.
Mix you up while you were born in an egg beater. Should be a knock on the door here. I was right.
Must be Daisy, my sweetheart. Come in, Daisy. Hello, Daisy.
Hello, tall, dark, and dopey.
Well, gal, your brains don't exactly make it in par. Gotta wait for that one just a second. Ain't seen your pappy lately. Where is he?
He'll be along in a minute. Just stopped by Ike Muller's saloon for his mail.
Why don't he go at the post office?
He says there's no kick in their ink.
Government ought to do something about that. Anyway, I'd like to see the old critter.
Here comes Pappy now.
Hi, Frank.
Hello, Buck. When'd you get the new glass door?
Glass door? Why, you just came in through the window.
I thought that first step was kind of high.
So are you, Pappy. So are you. Frank, how much brandy do you drink anyway?
Well, I don't know, Buck, but I'm having an adding machine put on my jug.
Well, you better be careful. You're getting kind of fat. Don't you take any setting up exercises?
Sure, when anybody sets them up.
Well, that ought to help. Answer the phone, Daisy.
Hello? Yes? Yes, I'll tell him. Oh, Buck, it's Sheriff Andy Devine. He wants to talk to you.
Oh, Andy, Hello, Andy. What's that? You did? I'll rush right over. Hold everything till I get there. Goodbye.
What is it, Buck?
Sheriff Devine just saw Cactus Face going into that old deserted hotel at Tombstone Creek.
Tombstone Creek? Well, that town's been deserted for nigh on to 30 years.
Yeah. Gee, Buck, they say that old hotel is haunted. It's full of spirits.
So is Pappy, and he ain't haunted.
Don't be too sure, gal. Well, you stay here, boys. I'm going to get Cactus Face. I'm off to Tombstone Creek to meet Sheriff Devine.
You want me to go with you, Buck?
Sure thing, Daisy, but ain't you scared?
Not any more than you are.
Well, you can still come. But we're going to bring back that varmint this time.
Dead or alive.
Come on, gal. Buck Benny rides again. Those nags of mine are getting bigger laughs than I am.
You better put a Mickey Finn in their oats.
Ask me that again, gal. I got a peak of an answer. Go ahead. Once more, this is a humdinger.
You better put a Mickey Finn in their oats.
I did, and they liked it. Wanted to get that one. Getting dark, Daisy. You know where we are?
No idea, Buck.
Reckon we must be lost. Wait a minute. Here comes someone down the road. I'll ask them. Hey, buddy. You know the way to Tombstone Creek?
I don't even know the way to Pomona.
Buckingham. He wouldn't know, Daisy.
Look, Buck. There's a light flickering straight ahead. Gee, it's spooky looking.
That might be the hotel. Wait. I see a figure standing out in front of it.
Maybe it's Andy.
Looks kind of dark, though.
Then it must be Amos.
Can't be. They're in Palm Springs. Anyhow, it's no time for humor, gal. Let's go. Come on, partner. Here. Come on. Here we are, Daisy. Whoa, partner.
Whoa. There's Annie Devine now.
Hello, Sheriff.
Hiya, Buck.
Chuck, that applause is liable to tip off Cactus Face.
I can't help it, Buck. I got relatives in the audience.
Is this the hotel where Cactus Face is hiding?
Yeah. Say, Buck, did you hear Fred Allen Wednesday night?
Never mind that. Let's go inside. Come along.
Come on, Buck.
You ain't scared, are you, Buck?
No. Come on, follow me.
Well, you're behind us.
And I'll follow you. Someone may attack us from behind. Quiet.
Well, I can't find the door, Buck.
There it is, right behind that wolf.
He's got welcome written on him, so let's go in.
Did you see that, Andy?
Yeah, the door opened by itself.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. What's that?
Who are you?
I'm the door man.
Funny, I can't see you.
No wonder I've been dead for 30 years.
Well, then I'll see you later. Come on, Andy.
What was that?
The telephone.
Well, answer it. It's suffering.
So are we.
Gotta leave you now. My wife's calling me.
This sounds like a wolf.
You should be married to her. Pardon me.
He must be gone with the wind. Sure is dark in here.
And do you think we ought to register, Buck?
No.
We gotta search this place. You take my hand, Andy. And Daisy, you take Andy. Now follow me. Be quiet. I just saw someone duck behind that post. Come on. What was that? Sure glad you're holding my hand, Andy.
I'm not holding your hand.
Neither am I.
Then whose hand is this without an arm on it? Let go of me.
Take it easy, Buck.
Who are you?
I'm the Boogie Man.
That's Boogie. Not Boogie.
Well, it's dark in here. Goodbye.
Must be a ghost artist. Come on, Andy. We'll try this next room. Funny, I don't hear our footsteps.
No wonder the sound man has been dead for 30 years.
Oh.
Hey, look, Buck. Look. The closet door's opening.
It sure is. Cactus Face might be in there.
No, he isn't.
There's that doorman again. What are you laughing at?
Did you hear Fred Allen Wednesday night?
Don't be so smart.
Hey, Buck. Hey, Buck, look.
There's someone running away.
Must be Cactus Face. Let's get him. I got him, Andy.
So am I.
Last week got you, you rat. Strike a match, Andy.
Okay.
Why, Buck, that ain't Cactus Face.
You're right. Listen, you, what are you doing here?
I'm just trying to get back to Pomona.
Oh, you, Buckingham, still lost, huh?
Yes, don't you know the way to Pomona?
Look, Buckingham, look, it's very simple. Look, you go out Melrose until you get to Western Avenue, see? Then you turn right until you get to 3rd Street.
Yeah.
Then you continue through the 3rd Street Tunnel and bear east on Garvey Boulevard.
Yeah.
Now you follow Garvey right through Monterey Park, Wilmar, and then you
this
go...
These thrilling directions will be continued next Sunday night. Will Buck get Cactus Face? Will Cactus Face find a new hideout? Will Buckingham get back to Pomona? Tune in next Sunday and hear for yourselves. Play, boys! We never forget them as long as we live.
those desserts our mothers used to make. And best of all, we remember those grand old-fashioned chocolate puddings. What wouldn't you give to have one of them right now? Well, you can have one of them anytime you want. A chocolate pudding just as good as your mother used to make. You'll find it in Jell-O chocolate pudding, the new-fashioned way to make a grand old-fashioned favorite. All you do is mix the contents of one package of Jell-O chocolate pudding with some milk, then cook and stir over a low fire until the mixture comes to a boil and is luscious, thick, and satin smooth. It only takes a few minutes. After that, just let it cool and then pour into sherbet glasses. That's how easy it is to make this extra special chocolate pudding, Jell-O chocolate pudding. After you've once tried it, you'll want to have it all the time. Jell-O chocolate pudding sells at the same low price as Jell-O, and one package makes enough for 6 happy servings. Ask your grocer tomorrow for Jell-O chocolate pudding.
This is the last number of the 15th program in the new Jell-O series, and we'll be with you again next Sunday night when we continue with Buck Benny Rides Again. Meanwhile, I'd like to thank several people for appearing on tonight's program. Andy Devine of Universal, Benny Baker of Paramount, and
Mary Livingston of Bedford Drive.
Bedford Drive.
Yeah, you go down Melrose Avenue until you get to Vine Street. Turn to your right, you get to Sunset Boulevard. Then you make a
left
turn.
Never mind, Mary. Good night, folks.
J-E-L-L.
The Jell-O program comes to you from Hollywood over the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.